Welcome to Pentagon Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Here's your host, Tom Temin.
The F-35 is the biggest and most expensive weapons system in history, you might have heard. And taken by itself, the airplane's next block upgrade, valued at $6 billion, would normally qualify as a major defense acquisition system all of its own. The Government Accountability Office wants DoD to declare Block 4 of the Joint Strike Fighter as a separate acquisition program for transparency and accountability reasons. Michael Sullivan is GAO's Director for Defense Weapon Systems Acquisitions. He detailed that rationale with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu, starting with a progress report on the F-35 program itself.
The program now is pretty stable in terms of both cost. There's still schedule risk in getting it to the services on time, but it's doable risk. You know, I think the program overcame most of its issues in 2010 when they declared a non-McCurdy breach. That, you know, the program had more or less doubled in cost at that point, and that was pretty hard to swallow for the department, for the Congress, and everyone, but they got past that. So having admitted that it's the most expensive program in the world, it's in relatively good shape now.
And in terms of development, I mean, you note that development is largely done. Is there truly light at the end of the tunnel where most of the hard questions are answered and we can move into steady, relatively low-risk production?
What remains with the development flight testing and software development is what they call the last of the mission systems capabilities that they're putting into the aircraft now, and that's the hardest part. That's essentially the brain of the aircraft. The software and the flight testing now are testing things like fusion, data fusion, where aircraft can talk to each other and talk to the ground and things like that. They're still testing a lot of things with electronic warfare and communication, so it's not a slam dunk by any means, but they're within 20%. They don't expect an awful lot of big design changes or engineering changes to the aircraft, so the design is fairly stable. I'd say there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and hopefully they'll get there, although it is going to be tough to meet schedule.
And on the issue of concurrency, which has been raised so many times, are we largely past the bad old days when elements of the aircraft were being designed at the same time they were being produced?
Yes, I think we're past that. As we said, there's 20% of the development flight test. And then they have to go to IOT&E and test it there. And at that point, you really have no more concurrency. So in these design changes, coming out of that testing have really dwindled, so they're diminished. I think they're in pretty good shape now, but they will have purchased, I think, around 500 aircraft by the time they're done with all the testing. But most of that concurrency, they've worked through. They've got retrofits for most of the big problems they had.
Let me turn to one of the particular issues that you guys have raised in your most recent reporting, which is the next block upgrade, Block 4, and the department's apparent plans to manage that as part of the existing program rather than breaking it off and declaring it a program of its own. You've advocated the latter. Tell us why and what are your concerns there?
We believe that they should have a business case for that Block 4, the upgrade they're planning. It's new capability. It wasn't in the baseline program. Some of the Block 4 will be used to tie up loose ends on the base program, but for the most part, it's new capabilities. Integrating more weaponry, more advanced weaponry, and a lot more capability. And most of that will be software-driven, very expensive. The department has not put a cost estimate out yet, but it does have in the future year's defense plan, which is a 5 or 6 year budget outlook, they have put about $3 billion of development funding in there for this Block 4. We think that constitutes a program on its own, and there's some precedent for that on the F-22. They did the same thing with that. They tried to absorb new capability into the base program. You more or less lost track of any kind of cost growth or schedule growth, and so the accountability was lacking. We would not want to see that happen again on a new program worth $3 billion. We think that a good business case established with good baselines laid down on cost and schedule is needed to, and we need to track that program to its own baseline.
Yeah, just on the transparency and oversight front, talk a bit more, if you could, about why it matters whether this is broken off into a separate program versus staying within the existing F-35 program.
Sure. Well, if you think about the existing program, it's now a $300+ billion program. If you're starting a program in a business case to add new capability for the future, and you have a baseline from the existing program like that, you could have cost growth of billions of dollars on that program, and it would be swallowed up. It wouldn't really show up in the original baseline program because the baseline's so big. So it wouldn't be, you know, what we think is if you have a $3 billion program and you have $1 billion worth of cost growth, that should show up as a Nunn-McCurdy breach. You know, they should stop and take a look at what they're doing. The way they're doing it now, that would not happen.
And I think the department's position on that is if you did break this off and declare it a program of its own, you're adding on additional layers of bureaucracy and applying all the strictures of the acquisition system yet again to a program that basically already exists. Are they right? Would you be trading transparency for potential cost and schedule growth?
I think it's. I think what they need to do is define why they would be. They've said that it would delay the program for a year, and they've given no rationale for that. So we'd like to see that. If it is just because of additional bureaucracy, well, then we would agree that something has to be done about that, because, in essence, they're doing everything you need to do to start a new program. They will eventually do an independent cost estimate. They're going to have a requirements document. They're going to have a Milestone B review within the Pentagon. They're going to have a preliminary design review. All these things you do when a new program starts up. And, you know, $3 billion meets the statutory threshold for a major defense acquisition program. Everything is there that says this should be its own program. They're arguing a year delay because if it's just because of bureaucracy and paperwork, maybe that's something that they need to work on.
One of the concerns that Senator McCain has raised over and over again is the sheer size of the management structure involved in the F-35, you know, anywhere from 2,000 to 3,000 people, depending on whose numbers you believe. Has GAO done any work on whether a program office of that size is reasonable, and if there's anything DOD could be doing to make it a bit, you know, leaner?
I have not done any work. Our team has not looked at anything like that. I'm in the process now of checking around to see what we've done, if we've done anything like that across GAO. And I would just say that I think it's a logical question and a reasonable question. There's, you know, thousands of people on that program. And I think Senator McCain is saying you ought to just devolve it to each service now and let them run their own variant. I think there's pros and cons to that. Right now you have one point of communication, you have contracting going through one office. I think that's a major thing is communication. When you devolve that, if you devolve that, you probably can get more efficient. But then you have issues about overlap, duplication, things like that. So it's something I think that's worth studying.
Besides anything that we've talked about so far, what are the major issues to be watching over the coming years and decades as this program continues to mature and go into development?
Well, the thing that worries us most is the affordability of the aircraft. I said earlier that they're doing a good job with cost and schedule now, and that's true. They got things right in 2010, and actually the cost estimate has actually gone down a little bit since then. That does not make it any easier to be buying aircraft at $14 billion a clip for the next 10 years. Very, very expensive. So we look at affordability. It's more than a JSF issue. If you take the top 10 programs right now that are major defense acquisition programs, they're eating up about 60% of that investment over the coming years, and this goes out. For JSF, we'll be averaging about $12 billion a year all the way out to 2040. And we just think that that's an affordability risk that eventually is going to have consequences.
Michael Sullivan is GAO's Director for Defense Weapons Systems Acquisition, speaking with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu. Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends. I'm Tom Temin.
Pentagon Solutions will return after these messages.
Listening to Pentagon Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Now here's your host, Tom Temin.
To federal contractors, four letters, LPTA, spell red flag. They actually stand for lowest price technically acceptable, and that's the approach the Pentagon says it's taking with a $17 billion multiple award contract known as Encore 3. Contractors say that's the wrong approach. Joining me to explain the objections, Trey Hodgkin, Senior Vice President of the IT Industry Council. Trey, good to have you back.
Thanks, Tom. Good morning.
Tell us about Encore 3 and what it is that industry is finding objectionable in the way this is being presented, because it has not been awarded yet.
Well, Encore 3 is going to be a follow-on. It's an IDIQ contract where vendors will be selected on the front end and then provide services based on task orders placed against the overall contract. The concern with the Defense Information Systems Agency's use of LPTA is that Encore is intended to acquire highly skilled services like cybersecurity engineering, network architects, technical engineering of that sort, that you really don't want to go out and necessarily find the lowest price for hourly rate for those types of skills. Unfortunately, that's the construct that's been put in play by DISA and DOD on this contract, or the renewal of this contract. They're going to go out. Companies are asked to submit bids in over a dozen different categories of capabilities, and the department will then evaluate those bids only on their prices offered, and they will rank them from the highest prices to the lowest prices, and then they will begin to look at whether or not at the lower end of the scale, companies are, at the bottom of the scale, I should say, whether or not companies have the technical qualifications for the types of skills they propose to offer. So the threshold to get in the game to play is how low can you make your price? And your price has to be lower enough to beat out, a significant portion of the other vendors. 15 to 20 at the bottom end of that scale are going to be selected, and everyone else won't even be looked at. So we think that's a really that's a faulty way to approach buying things that are intended to do things like secure the networks and build the networks of the future at the Department of Defense.
And since these task orders they can't be defined in advance because the way you describe them, they are services. What is the expression of price in this case? Is it priced per hour?
Correct. It's an hourly rate on the different skill sets that would be and capabilities that would be offered by each company, of course, delivered with individuals with those skills. So you're going to get a cybersecurity engineer, but you're going to get somebody fresh out of school, never worked on a program or a problem or a network, in a professional setting necessarily. I'm being very generic here, but the concern is that we're going to get people with lower levels of experience and skills. They're going to perhaps take longer to solve problems. They are going to deliver a less knowledgeable degree of skills. They're going to have less experience. And, at the end result, we think could be disastrous, frankly.
You're also saying, too, to the Pentagon that was not the original contention when they first launched Encore 3, that it would not be LPTA. And this seems to have come in during the course of mounting this whole program.
Well, we're actually aligning it to a memorandum Undersecretary Kendall did approximately a year ago. It was in March of last year, that outlined when are the appropriate times that LPTA should be used and when is it inappropriate to use it. And we think this is a perfect case that fits into that inappropriate category. And frankly, we're kind of befuddled why this was done in light of that pretty clear direction we thought from the Undersecretary for Acquisition, it doesn't seem to fit the mold that they put in place.
So the alternative then would be to use what, best value procurement? How would you have them express it otherwise?
We think that, yes, best value, you know, LPTA is an appropriate evaluation tool. It's on available to contracting officers on a spectrum of different options. We just don't think it's appropriate in this particular instance. We think that they should be looking at the skill sets that the companies can deliver, the quality of those skills, the degree of experience that the individuals who would deliver those skills can bring to bear on problems. And those should be the kinds of things that are differentiators for companies. And then if you want to get into a conversation with them and negotiate pricing, but we think the threshold to get on the contract audit, can you really deliver the skills we're going to need? Because this is a multi-year contract. We have to think about now, but we have to think about where might technology go, what skills may need be needed in the future as well. And to just base everything, you know, our initial threshold is going to be price, we think sets up a dynamic that's not going to meet that demand as effectively as possible in the future and potentially deliver less than satisfactory results.
We're speaking with Trey Hodgkin, Senior Vice President of the IT Industry Council. And if Frank Kendall did say that LPTA would not be appropriate in these innovative type of situations, why do you suppose that hasn't trickled down to the contracting offices and individual contracting officers by now?
Well, to be clear, what Mr. Kendall said is that when the offering is complex and you have the potential for truly complex issues, and as you said, you know, or perhaps difficult to identify at today's date, about what complex issues you may encounter in the future, that's when it's inappropriate. Frankly, we're kind of confused as to how it got this far. There's multiple vetting stages in the department, and we can't discern, we've been unable to discern how the decision was, the approval decisions were made and the multiple stops things like this have to make to get to this point. So that's why we're being vocal about you know, what's going on here and what we think could potentially be a problem for the department in the future.
Now, we know that two companies have already protested in advance. I think CACI is one of them and Booz Allen Hamilton. And so between the two big associations, including yours, and two big contractors, any word that DISA is listening and maybe might change course?
Well, we've heard some indications that they are, in fact, hearing the concerns we're raising. We've not seen anything to indicate that they've changed course. We've also been able to hear from the Hill that Congress is listening and observing what's going on, and they're also taking a look at the use of this. There's language in the House bill about how LPTA is used, and we anticipate, you know, the Senate bill is being marked this week. The Armed Services Committee's bill will be completed this week, and we anticipate that there might be some language directed at this issue there as well.
If it comes out as LPTA, couldn't individual contracting officers of the services using this vehicle simply make their best value determination at that point? For example, if a given hourly rate from a contractor would require more hours to do something that's special, then the dollars would be there anyhow.
Well, but the issue at hand is that we're picking and choosing which vendors will be available for those contracting officers to choose from in the future. And our primary threshold criteria is how low can you make your prices in an hourly rate? It's not about what skills you can deliver. So you're correct. A contracting officer can make those determinations or perhaps look at additional criteria in the future, but the pool of candidates they have to choose from got into the pool because they had the lowest price and not necessarily the level of skills you're looking for. So, you know, you run the risk of ending up with a situation where the contracting officer won't have the A team to choose from. They're going to have the C or the D team, perhaps. And I say that based because they're going to be offering things at the lowest price. We are quite confident, based on what the companies are telling us, is that the only way they can drive their costs and their hourly rates down is to pick the people who have less skills, less experience, less time on the job, and put those people in play to be able to be, you know, come up with as low a possible price on the hourly rates. They've also told us that those people are not going to be in the pool very long because as soon as they start getting some experience, as soon as they start getting, you know, the different alphabet soup of different cybersecurity certifications people can get, and they move forward in their careers, they're going to they're going to move themselves out of the pool of candidates that the company is willing to put forward because they can get a higher price for that individual in the more competitive commercial market or for other vendors in the government space or for customers in the government space. So you're going to see this churn of people at the lowest ends of the hourly rates that are going to be made available on this contract. And given the complex security and network assurance type problems that we anticipate will be addressed with contracts through this vehicle, we think that's the wrong approach to figure out who's going to be in play to help solve those problems.
So a better approach then would be to simply have a big tent, let a lot of contractors on, and then let this all play out at the task order level at whatever price they and the government negotiate.
Well, that's certainly one option, and that's what a lot of agencies do when they put together an IDIQ. They identify, but their threshold for putting people in the big tent is usually, what kind of qualifications can you bring to bear? Can you address a specific problem set? I mentioned there's more than a dozen different sets of capabilities that they're looking to acquire in the future, and they've defined. And so you may have some companies that are really good at 3 or 4 or 10 of those, depending upon the size of the company. But that's usually the threshold for getting in. And then when you determine what the job is going to be and you have a look at how complex it might be, and how many people you have to bring to bear, what skill sets you're going to have to bring to bear, then you can begin formulating, well, exactly how much will this cost me? It's hard to know those things on a multi-year contract when you're potentially years away from even knowing what the problem is, much less trying to solve it.
Trey Hodgkins is Senior Vice President of the IT Industry Council. Thanks so much for weighing in on there.
Appreciate it, Tom. Have a good day.
Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends. Also note that both the House and Senate are looking into DOD's use of lowest price technically acceptable. You can read more at federalnewsradio.com. I'm Tom Temin.
You've been listening to Pentagon Solutions. Download this show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Search Pentagon Solutions.